Hey, you're listening to Rock Andor Roll. I'm BJ, and this is the first episode of a new recurring series that I will be calling Overlooked, where I will use one episode to focus on one really strong album that I don't think many people have heard, but that definitely deserves to be heard. The band Interview was founded in 1977 by Pete Allerhand, Alan Brain, and Jeff Starrs in Bath in southwest England, and they were eventually joined by drummer Manny Elias, who would later join Tears for Fears, and a bass player named Phil Crowther. I will be using quotations from some of the band members throughout this episode that I got from two websites, cdroad.com and interviewtheband.com. This is a quote from singer of Interview, Jeff Starrs. Around the middle late 70s, I was playing a regular date in a Bath coffee bar, doing an acoustic set with various friends. Alan and Pete came to see me one night and asked if I'd like to create a group with them. Manny was stolen from a local heavy metal group, and we finally settled for a non-musician on bass, showing him where to place his fingers. Things must have gone quickly for the band because a year later, in 1978, they signed a 5-album deal with Virgin Records. They recorded some demos with Peter Gabriel producing, but their first album, Big Oceans, ended up being produced by Colin Thurston, who got his start as Tony Visconti's engineer, but would go on to produce the first two Duran Duran albums. Another quote from Jeff Starrs: "We soon had a following, ran off a demo and hit the London record companies, inviting them to a special gig we'd arranged in Bath. Virgin turned up and it was a good night. Even Peter Gabriel turned up to sing Salisbury Hill with us. He lived nearby. Peter also gave us legal advice when Virgin asked us to sign, and because of his experience and his own lawyer, it took us nearly a year to work out a contract with them, much to Mr. Branson's disgust. However, we went straight into the studio to record Big Oceans. Colin Thurston was assigned. Virgin left us pretty much to it." The band's very first release with Virgin was a very pub rock sounding 1978 single called Birmingham. Interview's debut album, Big Oceans, came out in 1979, and honestly, I don't like it very much, except for one ambitiously arranged and neatly melodic song called Academies to Anger. We'll be right back. So, like I said, I don't really like Big Oceans very much, and at that point, who would have expected this band to release a very impressive, high-quality collection of new wave pop songs for their second and unfortunately final album for Virgin Records? But they did. The same three guys have writing credit on all the songs on both albums, Pete Allerhan, Alan Brain, and Jeff Starrs, but something very different is going on with the second record. I guess the most noticeable change is that many of the songs on the record are more straightforward rock songs. Still ambitious and creative, but not as strangely constructed as the songs on the first album were. Not as much of a pastiche of styles, but rather just more focused and to the point. In between albums, the band had changed bass players. Phil Crowther, that guy that they had to show where to put his fingers, he was replaced by Alfie Agius from the Teardrop Explodes, who would later join The Fix. And Alfie's bass playing on the second record is right up front for much of the album, and it's a real driving force. So maybe the change in bass players contributed to the streamlining of the arrangements. Also, the second record was produced by Mick Glossop, who had produced punk rock records for The Lurkers, The Ruts, Skids, Penetration. He produced Gillen, Wasted, Pete Way's band, Post-UFO. He would go on to produce The Alarm, The Waterboys, and Wonder Stuff. So bringing Mick Glossop on board to produce, he's a seasoned punk and rock producer, this probably nudged the band Interview more in that direction. In the end, Interview were an artsy pop band, musically creative, prone to intricate arrangements, but they reined it in for the second album. The songwriting is stellar, including the often very poetic and literate lyrics, which singer Jeff Starrs obviously took very seriously. So this record we're talking about came out in 1980 on Virgin Records, and it was called Snakes and Lovers. But as would sometimes happen, when the album was released in the US, it was given a different title. Actually, its title was taken away. It was released as a self-titled album. And the album cover was altered. The same picture was used, but smaller, with a different color scheme and a different design. Also, the sequencing of the songs was shuffled around for the American release, as would often happen. The American team at Virgin Records must have thought that the album had a better chance of being successful in the US with these changes, I guess. And even though the UK release has a better title and a better cover, I prefer the US sequencing. The US release, definitely, they front-loaded the album with the best songs. The first five songs in a row are just killer. But the US release is also the way that I originally heard the record at first. So because of that, that's the order that I will present the songs here, consistent with the sequencing of the US release, the self-titled album, which is really Snakes and Lovers. This album was impeccably produced, and the songs are very well written and inspired, and it all comes together to yield a definite lost classic. This is just a great, overlooked album by a virtually unknown band. This is a quote from Jeff Starrs, the singer. "Mick Glossop was great, very open, loads of ideas and encouraging experiments with arrangements. Pete Allerhan had also been playing around with keyboards, piano, etc., and Pete Wingfield, a superb English keyboard session man, came to help out. We were still somewhat pressurized by Virgin to stay in the FM mode and come up with some single material, which, in my opinion, prevented us from really being adventurous with the album. Songs like Hide and Seek and To the People, very poppy stuff, seemed to stop the flow of the material like Adventurers, Union Men, and Style on Seaview. Singles are weird things. In one sense, it's a craft, an art as hard as short story writing is to the novel. But it's also directly linked to the commercial side. The idea is to create something that will sell. I always felt trapped in that process." What I get from that quote is, what I like about the record, more than the first record, is that they were trying to write singles, and the label prevented them from being, as Jeff said, adventurous. So, probably what I don't like as much about the first album, what I love about the second album, is exactly what he's criticizing, I would guess. But Jeff did say at the end of that quote, "The album itself, with its harmonies, arrangements, keyboards, etc., was rather ambitious." And he is right. I guess a different kind of ambition from what Big Oceans was. Big Oceans maybe also was kind of naive in its just conglomeration of different styles and not as much focus. This is what guitarist Alan Brain had to say. Quote, "The single Virgin chose to release from Snakes and Lovers was Hide and Seek, which I felt was one of our weaker songs, and I'm convinced that It's Over Now would have been the better choice." So the single Hide and Seek opens the original UK release of the album. It's the first song on the UK release. But on the US release, they put it at position number 3. In the US, the choice was made to open the record with a song called Adventurers, which is the second song on the UK release. So probably what happened is the label in the UK just stuck the single at the beginning, and the band didn't even like that. Because Adventurers is the obvious opening track for this record, it's perfect to open the album. Definitely should have been the opening songs, and it was probably what the band wanted. The single gets stuck there instead. I love the majestic, soaring chorus, and the song definitely has that epic enough feel to really kick off an album. This is a quote from singer Jeff Starrs. "Adventurers is an optimistic song which praises the ability of Gaia, or Mother Earth, to regenerate despite man's stupidity. When sullen eyes stare across military seas and companies vie for her, Margaret Thatcher's favor, and a lullaby means put the child to sleep and let the earth move in her labor, on and on, patience is her way, on and on, this is what she'll, Gaia, say on a day like today," etc. Jeff says, "If we listen to Gaia, she can help us become the hero, to become some crazy saint running down some dark street on a mission." Quote from the song's lyrics, "Tall, brave, and strong." We'll be right back. The second song on the U.S. release is a great song called I Hope It's Me, which was stuck on the second side of the U.K. version of the album. This is a great pop song, masterfully arranged and produced. Such thoughtful, high-quality songwriting that kind of defies genres and just feels universally like a good song, which is just recorded and delivered perfectly. A quote from Jeff Starrs about the song: "The lyrics to I Hope It's Me concern a period of my life around 1975 when I went over for the first time to France to try and build a life there, up in the mountains around a place called Saint-Chinian. I took my daughter over, who was 5 at the time. My wife stayed in England whilst I got things together. I stayed 9 months, during which time my wife had an affair with another guy. Finally came over and things were so mixed up, the wild lifestyle so disorientating, that everything fell apart. The lyrics try to reflect the bitterness of not having given that lifestyle a chance." So the third song on the U.S. release is a song that we've already discussed. It was the first song on the UK release and the first single. Great, great, just straight up pop single, power pop song. I actually played this on one of the early power pop episodes, Hide and Seek. Track 4 on the album is a song called Crossing Borders. Simple and great, timeless pop music, fit in with new wave, but could be from any era, really. Kind of a folk rock verse, singer-songwritery with a great hooky chorus, nice little guitar break, great bridge, excellent lyrics. What more can you ask for? Let's hear what Jeff Starrs had to say about Crossing Borders. Quote, "It could be about a conscientious objector in a dialogue with his girlfriend. The subject matter is inspired from a Tim Buckley song, And I Know I Would Recognize Your Face, in which he duets with a chanteuse. He plays the role of a conscientious objector. Crossing Borders is about this. You ask me where's the crime? I say it's in the law. It was also written because my ex-wife would always find some reason why we had to move to another place, another lifestyle." There's a line in this song that I really love where he says, "From Swansea Bay, she'll sleep on through the driving rain. I have to stay awake by changing lanes." You come to where I hide. Line. Up next is another pretty straightforward power pop song. Great guitar breaks, great melody on the verse, and then a very strong chorus. This song, like the rest of the album, just sounds great. Killer production and performances. Just listen to Alfie on the bass. This is a song called It's Over Now. Closing out side one of the US release, this is actually the last song on the UK release, is a stark ballad called Union Men, seemingly about striking workers being violently subdued. This is a really good ballad by a very serious band, very artistically inclined, and Jeff Starz obviously approached his lyrics like literature, and he really had something to say, and he was really good at saying it.
And all the people in the hallways whisper, "Stop it, sound of another round firing. Hear the gun.
All right, we're flipping the record over, at least for the U.S. release. The first song on side two is a song called To the People. Jeff Starr said that they wrote this one to be a single. They did a great job. He didn't really like it. I think he's dead wrong about this song. It's one of the band's punkier, more aggressive tunes. But really, it's great power pop song, maybe a little pop punky, like I said. But like the rest of the album, it's so excellently performed and produced, and all of the elements just come together wonderfully to make for just a great presentation of a really high quality song.
Leaves me more.
Second song on side two is a song called A Gift. It's another upbeat song driven along by great bass playing by Alfie Agius. The song doesn't have a brilliant chorus that stands out the way most of the other songs do. This is Jeff Starrs talking about A Gift, and he'll start quoting his own lyrics in this. Strange one, this. I think it's about trying to cheer up some friend or lover by magically creating a series of fantasies. Switch on the light. The narrator conjures up miniature volcanoes, a ballerina dressed in white. Don't be blue, babe. John Wayne never apologized, so how about you? And now don't you say this is not your place? I've made it work and there is so much more to do, and anyway, what's worse is seeing the look on your face. Up next is a lilting ballad called The Conqueror. This is my least favorite song on the album. It's very schmaltzy. The Let's Go Get Married chorus, not great. But what did singer Jeff Starz have to say about it? This one I like, he says. The Conqueror is a symbol for all that motivates the hero. I guess it's very much a man's song without wishing to be a chauvinist. So take it as you will, this is The Conqueror. Conqueror is followed up by a song called Style on Seaview, a very atmospheric, kind of a haunting song. Jeff Starz had to say, one of my favorites because it combines a kind of lullaby with violent imagery. It's about a hypothetical adolescent vegetating in some coastal town called Seaview who wishes that something would happen to shake up the hollow life there. He wishes the people had style. Wore strange clothes. In the end, he imagines the inhabitants transforming into zombies who fed off the flesh of fugitives hiding. A story of everyday latent psychosis. All right, so that's Snakes and Lovers by Interview. The record ends with a 7-minute song called Until I Hold Her. It's kind of a dark, funky song, turns aggressive or angry. Alfie's bass, very prominent again. It's another very atmospheric tune with a lot of depth. This is what Jeff Starrs had to say. Our A&R man passed me a book which I think is my favorite all-time novel, The Magic Mountain by Thomas Mann. It takes place on the Day of the Dead, Mexico maybe. There's a sax player in the song. Quote, candles help keep out the dark, but I'm white and I'm shameful and I'm all tied up, and there's nothing that I can do until I hold her, and you must never tell her that I told you. Thank you. So soon after the release of this great album, which got very little promotion, Interview did some UK support dates with the Pretenders and Peter Gabriel, but that was about it in terms of promotion. They had a contract for more albums. Jeff Starr said that their A&R man still had a lot of faith in them, got them into the studio to put down some ideas for the third album, but Virgin Records cut off the money. Quote from Jeff, "There was not really enough time to make any coherence out of the material recorded, and disillusion entered the Interview ranks. I was so cut up by the business wrangles being more important than creating music that I decided to up and out. There was no more fun in what we were doing, and another band bit the dust." So that was it. They started working on a third album. I've seen a list of song titles, but I've never actually heard any of the material that came out of their final recording sessions at the end of 1980. But the band does have a legacy of this one really, really great album. I know the first album, Big Oceans, does have some fans, but like I said, doesn't do much for me. But holy shit, the second record by Interview is definitely a classic album of the era, of the genre, whatever you want to call it, power pop, new wave, just 80s pop, came out in 1980, so very, very strong record. I hope you agree. After what you've heard on this episode, let me know. Send me a message on Facebook, leave a comment on Facebook, send me an email, rockandorrollpodcast@gmail.com, and let me know if you're into this concept of an episode that just focuses on one overlooked album, and we'll see which albums I come up with to focus on in the future. By the way, you may have noticed that my release schedule has not been as consistent as of late. That's because numerous reasons my work schedule changed, and I'm really trying to work on this book about Cheap Trick. So I'll try to keep up the release schedule of the podcast. We'll see what happens, but unfortunately, I apologize. I probably won't be as reliable as I have been, at least in the short term. But I'll do the best I can, and thanks for listening.
I'll be back.